This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I guess this one thing that was holding stuff together, like a marriage, whether it's happy or not, when that falls apart, sort of everything falls apart around it, and then you have to rearrange all the bits into a new kind of pattern.
You're listening to Jeans and an Ice Top, your go-to podcast when it comes to navigating adulting and the big life stuff, with me, Chels. With no guidebook, most of us are fumbling through life, trying to remember to take the bins out, with no real idea what we want to do career-wise, what on earth love is, and did anyone mention taxes? Through some oversharing, way too many cups of coffee, and some little nuggets of advice, I hope to make the existential crisis that bit more bearable by reminding you that you're not alone. And sometimes, it's about focusing on the things we can control and keeping things simple, like jeans and a nice top.
Hey, 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 I am back and with a bang for season two of Jeans and a Nice Top podcast. Wow, I am so excited to release this with you guys. I took a month off, like a creative break, darlings. And now I'm back with some real kick-ass guests this season. I've taken it up a notch, completely revamped the style, and I'm just so excited to share these stories with you. We've got a really awesome guest to kick off the season, and that is the one, the only, Samantha Baines. If you haven't heard of her, I don't know what rock you have been hiding under, but sort yourself out and get yourself on her Instagram ASAP. In this episode, we discuss everything from bisexuality to working on Magic Mike and being best buds with Channing Tatum. Sorry, what? Divorce? And we actually delve quite deeply into that, and I find it really uplifting and an interesting conversation, as it's quite often a taboo, especially in modern day society. And finally, the healing power of comedy. Comedy is the epicenter of my life. It's how I provide joy for myself and those around me through my sarcasm and self-deprecation. So I hope you enjoy the first episode of the season. I'm really excited to share it with you guys. As always, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps me when you share your feedback, when you repost my content, and you spread the word. I want as many people to experience the joy, the giggles, and the nonsense that I share in this space. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at SmileToHealth. And if you like poetry, go check out my book on Amazon. It's called Cursed to Feel. Welcome to another episode of Jeans and an Ice Top. And this week, we are blessed with the real-life human sunshine that is Samantha Baines. She is a comedian, an actress, as seen in The Crown and The Silent Witness, two of my all-time favourite shows, not gonna lie. She's an award-winning author of The Night the Moon Went Out and Harriet vs. the Galaxy, a podcast host of The Divorce Club, and my favourite descriptive, a joy facilitator. Isn't that just the most beautiful description? Like, I want to be a joy facilitator. And I forgot to mention, she's blue tick on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen. Blue tick. We are in the presence of a goddess. But for those who don't know you, tell us who you are and what you do.
I do indeed have a blue tick on Instagram and Twitter. I think I was in The Crown when I got my blue tick. And my friend, I was on my way to my hen do, but my friend changed it to my blue tick verified party because it was exciting.
That's incredible. Which one were you more excited about, Instagram or Twitter?
I think it was Twitter because I think I got Instagram first.
Yeah.
Because I did a project with Instagram and Facebook. So, you know, really? So I think it was Twitter. And that was, you know, my first one that I was on. I am an actress, comedian, author, broadcaster, hearing aid wearer. I'm ambassador for RNID, which is a deaf charity. And I like to knit.
Oh, I love that. What kind of things do you knit?
So, well, it's obviously, it's meant to be summer now. But... when it's slightly colder, I knit scarves and sell them to raise money for hearing dogs, which is a charity that trains up dogs for people with hearing loss and deafness like me. And then I've also forayed into jumpers since the lockdown has been. So I've knitted myself a couple of cardigans and a jumper, and I've also had a couple of jumper commissions, but it's a lot of work to knit a jumper.
I was going to say single-handed, and there's all these complicated stitches. Like my nan taught me how to knit when I was younger, and I could do the ordinary stitch and the purl stitch, which I think is the reverse. But that's the extent of my ability.
Yeah, well, it's quite straightforward once you learn it. But yeah, I'm definitely not like one of these amazing knitters that has a knitting business, you know, and knows all about all the stitches. So I'm going to stick to scarves that raise money for charity. But I do love knitting. I've knitted blankets and all sorts of stuff like that.
Oh, fun.
And I recently came out as bisexual on the internet.
I saw your post. It was so beautifully written. And I think, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like liberated, or like what was the process behind that?
Yeah, so I think I've been saying in things, I fancy women and men. But I'd kind of been avoiding the word bisexual, and I don't know why. There was something really scary about it.
I feel like once you put a label out there, you kind of open yourself to judgment then, don't you, I guess, especially online.
Yeah, and also I was married to a man and then got divorced from him, and that's why I set up my podcast, The Divorce Club. So I think people assumed I was straight for a long time. And it got to the point where I was like, I just need to say it out loud. So I thought it was the end of Pride Month. And I was like, now is
the time.
So, it's just really nice to say it out loud. And what's been amazing is that so many people have like replied and said that they are too, and that they haven't said it out loud before. And it's been really nice.
I've got so many friends that are in that similar position, in that we all know they're bisexual, but they're just not, I don't think they're ready to attach a label to it. Or like you said, they feel weird about it. I think that must be so liberating. And like you said, like what a great time to do it as well.
It's funny though, because I feel like now I've done it, I feel some sort of pressure to like prove it. So I feel like my next relationship has to be with a woman. Otherwise people are going
to
be like,
you need to find the woman of your dreams.
Yeah. But no, I think lots of people message me as well who are currently like married to a man or in a woman in relationship with a man and have still come out as bisexual. So I think it's just great for visibility. And, you know, obviously it doesn't mean I won't be married to another man, but I might be married to a woman.
Do you think bisexuality is actually something that's not spoken about quite enough? I feel like you get either end of the spectrum. So you're either gay or you're straight. But there's not a lot of exploration of actually people that want to explore both. And why not?
Yeah, I've actually written a Telegraph article about it, which will be out soon. And it's interesting because I think for a long time I didn't feel gay enough, in inverted commas.
That makes total sense, though. I feel like there's a stereotype.
Yeah, like, am I a lesbian? Well, I do like women, but I still like men.
Yeah.
Am I straight? Well, I still like women. And I think bi visibility maybe isn't as strong as it could be. And there are loads of people doing amazing work. There's a great podcast called Bi Pride and another one called Bisexual Brunch.
I love that. I'll link these in the show notes so people can have a listen. I definitely will be.
Yeah, which are great at like exploring kind of bisexuality and talking to people who've kind of come out. But I think a lot of the time it's seen as like, oh, you'll say you're bisexual, but actually you're gay, and you'll eventually decide that you're gay. Or some men think that it's just like a sexy thing that we say to turn them
it's
on.
It's like a fetishized thing for women, I think.
And some women who are lesbians have a little bit of a problem with bisexual people, you know, on dating apps. Yeah, if you say you're bisexual, obviously not all, but some lesbians are like, no, I'm only going to date other lesbians. That's so, yeah, there still is a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of stigma around everything to do with pride, hence why there's a Pride Month. But
The whole...
Obviously, my experiences with bisexuality, so that's what I can talk about. But, yeah, so I am now a deaf, divorced bisexual, which I think is a lovely lineup of
three. What a great way to introduce yourself.
Yeah, I should have said that at the beginning.
Plus, I like knitting. What a great bio. Like, no one is going to have that. It makes you extra interesting and extra fabulous. That's what I'm here for. My bio is so boring because I'm a straight white female. Like, there's a lot of us. You got to bring out the other little niches, like slightly obsessed with Harry Potter.
Oh, like, I love Harry Potter too.
Yay! Oh, what house are you? I always ask people for this.
Well, Ravenclaw.
That makes sense because you're very intelligent.
That's nice of you to say. I want to be Gryffindor.
Yeah.
But I'm just not brave enough.
Are you honest?
I'm more of the like analytical. I feel like if it was like a spy movie.
Yeah.
You know, if you're thinking of like Tom Cruise would be Gryffindor. And then I'd be the like Ravenclaw woman in the office who does all the like.
Or you kind of like the hacker, the person that like hacks into the building and stuff. I think that's more fun anyway. And you're less likely to get caught.
Well, we hope. What are you?
I fall into the cliche Gryffindor, and actually I used to love it, but then everyone's always like, oh, it's always like, of course you are. And then you're just like, well okay, maybe I'm a Hufflepuff then. And then it's like, I think I verge on the Hufflepuff. I think I'm a blend of the two. Yeah, but I am. My Harry Potter quiz told me that I'm a Gryffindor through and through. But I think I am quite ballsy, so that's probably why.
See, I thought I was, but no, the quiz told me I'm Ravenclaw. My sister's Slytherin. I feel like the Slytherins are the real kind of left field. So when someone says they're Slytherin, yeah, you're like, oh, no.
I found out my best friend was, and I was like, I don't know. I'm questioning this friendship now. I've known her for over a decade. I was like, I just don't think I can trust you anymore. You've got onto the different path, you know? I don't know if it can work. She's probably going to listen to this.
There should be like a Harry Potter dating app of like, what house are you?
Oh my goodness. I actually would really appreciate that. I have recently had a breakup that was completely out of the blue and broke my heart into like a million pieces. And my friends were like, you need to go back on the app. So blah, blah, blah. And I can't do it. And then I went out with my friends and we got drunk. I downloaded it for fun. And I had a full on 15 minute conversation with this guy purely about Harry Potter. You're fun. I like you. Like, even if we're just friends, let's just hang out. Because he was like, oh, yeah, like, meet me in the common room. And I was like, leave me a butterbeer, yeah? And it was just absolute banter. So, yeah, Harry Potter app, genius. I think that's what we all need. I think that's what we're missing.
Well, there you go. They've done everything else with Harry Potter merchandising. So yeah. Why not?
Why not just add, or just have it as a section, Hinge or something, you know, where you can put like your preferences, your spirituality or whatever, have your Harry Potter house.
Yeah, I love it.
As a distinguisher. So every season I have set questions I ask everyone and it's an overall theme. And the one this season is three things that you can't live without. I initially meant this as a handbag situation, but everyone has taken it to the next level as like a desert island situ. So it can be people, it can be items. Some people have chosen chocolate over their wives, which I think is very interesting.
Well, so, I will welcome them on the divorce club.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll give you their names. You can have them on.
That's hard. Three things I can't live without. I mean, I immediately thought of my hearing aid. I mean, I think kind of it depends on the scenario, because obviously if it was desert island, then I probably wouldn't really need it. So although if I was looking for like rescue helicopters, I would need it. So probably my hearing aid, and if I could bring the hearing aid with the charger in one of those, because obviously
That can be one. I won't be mean, that can be one choice.
Thank you. And the second one, I think book. I'm going objects.
Yeah,
just because obviously I write children's books and I love reading, but not my own. I wouldn't just bring my own book.
You know what? I was going to say, have you ever read, obviously you read it for the editing process, but have you ever sat down and read your book?
I have actually, because I recorded the audio book of my book. So I had to sit down and read it to like remind myself and write down a list of all the characters so I could come up with their voices and stuff. And I read my book in when I'm doing like schools workshops. And it's so funny because now I've written, so Harriet versus the Galaxy was my first book that came out with, it's about a little girl with a hearing aid and she fights aliens in space with her gran, sure, because her hearing aid translates alien languages, as they all do.
That's genius. Obviously, it's a special skill that we're all denied.
Yeah, but because since I've written The Night the Moon Went Out, which is, again, has a deaf protagonist, but she goes in an adventure to turn the moon back on with a talking owl, again, sure. And I've been working on other things. So now when I go back to read Harriet, I sort of forget exactly what I've written. And I have a time been reading it in a school's workshop and gone, oh, this is funny. Like, I've forgotten that. I'm like reading it afresh. Yeah, like, I wrote this. This is cool. And I did actually write it. There's a lot of, you know, people who write children's books and do other things don't write their books, and they just come up with the ideas and they have ghostwriters.
Really?
Yeah. A very big one in particular who's a man does that.
No.
But yeah, I have written every word of my books. So, but anyway, I wouldn't bring my own books to just stare at. That would be weird. But definitely a little collection of books would be nice. And I actually love reading children's books.
Yeah, me too.
Like middle grade fiction, YA fiction. Really. But I guess because I write them, so I'm in that world. But also there's just more excitement and magic.
They're a lot more fun. I feel like there's a lot of, I mean, I've read some really good books recently that have really kind of taken me away a bit as a fiction. But I feel like adult fiction is a lot more serious and it's life stuff and it's always about love and things like that. Whereas there's something just really fun about a children's book and it literally can go anywhere. Like, if somebody came in and said there was a talking owl, you'd be like, well, of course there is. Why wouldn't there be? Whereas if you were reading like an adult book, you'd be like, why is the owl talking again? You end up bringing in all of that annoying adult logic that no one really wants to bring into their life. You still want to be a big kid.
Yeah. And I do not like logic. So that's why children's books are for me. So yeah, definitely a little collection of fun children's books. And then for the last one, I think probably would be my family. So my mum and my sister, because my dad died in 2016.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And he was only 60. And it was sort of quite a shock. And it was just after I'd got married. And so it was a really hard time. Yeah. But since, you know, with that and also obviously the pandemic, me, my mum, my sister are like closer than ever. We've seen each other more than ever. And they definitely got me through like a lot of that grief and also really hard times in my divorce. And
yeah.
So yes, I think my family would be the third one.
Is your sister older or younger?
Younger.
Oh, so you've got the big sister responsibility.
Yes, but when we go out, but she's 4 years younger than me, but we look a fairly similar age because she's quite, you know, she's got a wild head on her shoulders.
Yeah.
So when we go out, I always say to people, who do you think's the older sister? And it really annoys her because sometimes, I mean, they normally pick me, but sometimes they pick her and I'm like, ha, ha, ha.
Just like, still got it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we didn't get on when we were little. I was a beast to her because I was like the first child and the first grandchild in our family. And then she came along and I was like, what is this?
I have to share attention.
Yeah, and everyone's cooing over her. So, but now we're adults, we get on really well.
Oh, that's lovely. I think that's a really nice mix. And they're all very good reasons as well. It's so interesting because I ask people this question, they go really rogue. I've had some like hilarious answers come through, but I really like that. It's quite a well-rounded one.
Thanks.
You're welcome. The first thing I really wanted to go into specifically is your podcast, which is how I came across you when my friend was going through a difficult time. And I love it because it openly discusses a topic that still has so much stigma attached to it. And there's a lot of pressure, I think, so I'm 25, turning 26, and I'm starting to, before I didn't really notice, I wasn't really paying attention, just living my life. And I don't know if it's a thing for every generation, but I've hit 25 and over category of X Factor, and now everyone is all of a sudden getting engaged and married and having baby. This pressure is coming out of nowhere. And actually, I felt like your podcast made it accessible for people like me as well to know, one, you don't have to do that. Two, it's okay if it goes wrong. And three, bringing some real like lighthearted perspectives to it. I really love, I wrote down her name, Helen Thorns. She talks about sexual freedom, absolute badass. And I thought it was such an interesting perspective. And again, something that wasn't explored enough. But what I wanted to ask you was if you could discuss in a bit detail your personal experience with divorce and what kind of gave you the inspiration to kind of bite the bullet and create something like the Divorce Pod.
Sure. So I don't know. It's nice that you said like breaking down taboos and talking about a taboo subject. And I guess that's kind of become my thing. And I didn't ever like mean it to me. Like, I started off doing stand-up comedy about just like sex and fun times.
Yeah.
And then I was in Magic Mike at the same time.
Yes,
as I just
I'm
got
definitely going to dissect that later. So many six packs in one place. Wow.
But in Magic Mike, I was talking about like sexual empowerment and sexual freedom with some of my jokes. And I've actually stopped doing straight stand-up comedy now. Mm-hmm. And I still call myself a comedian, you know, because that's my background and I still write funny stuff. But I've stopped doing stand-up and sort of more moved into like podcasts and activism, I guess, because breaking down taboos has kind of, become a thing for me. And I think that's because when you have such a big experience in your life, you know, like your dad dying for me, like being diagnosed with hearing loss, like getting divorced, it kind of really changes your perspective on yourself and also the world around you and like what you're doing with your life. And like everything comes sort of this, I guess this one thing that was holding stuff together, like a marriage, whether it's happy or not, when that falls apart, sort of everything falls apart around it. And then you have to rearrange all the bits into a new kind of pattern. And I know that with my divorce, my divorce was a mutual decision. We both sat down and agreed that we should separate. So it wasn't kind of a shock to me or anything like that. Yeah. But it was still so hard. And I think we've been holding on for longer.
I was going to say, it's one of those things where it's, I've obviously not been divorced, but like even a breakup that's amicable is a lot more difficult to process than one that I'm currently going through the angry stage. So you know how you go through initially, you're like going after the pining. I want them back. Like, I feel sorry for myself. Now I'm going through that. Fuck you. Like, how dare you do that to me? And I feel like when it's amicable, you don't get that aggression to kind of fuel you on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because if you listen to the different series of the podcast, I feel like I'm going through different emotions for each series. And there's definitely an angry series. Because I think for a long time, I felt like I couldn't be angry because it was half my decision. But actually, anger is important for self-protection and you need the angry bit to kind of start looking after you again. But the reason I set up the podcast is it kind of divorced threw my life upside down. And we were only married for 2 years as well. So everyone was like, oh my God, that was so quick.
How long had you been together before, if you don't mind me asking?
So in total, we were together for 8 years. And by the time we got divorced, we were together for 10. So because it takes so long to go through. But at the time, I didn't know anyone else who was getting divorced. And some of my friends were just getting married. But I knew no one that I could like have a conversation with. Like even my mum separated from my dad, but they were never officially divorced because my dad died. So I had no one that I could talk about divorce with and just like ask questions to.
Because there's so much to it as well. Like there's, you know, obviously you've got the obvious things like all of the financial side and the housing situation. And obviously if you've got pets or children, it makes things a lot more complicated. But there's loads of other things within that, because when you've been together for someone for so long, you've built your identity around that other person. Like they are part of who you are and how you exist in the world. And yeah, it must be so hard to not have anyone else to go. Everyone's had a breakup. Everyone can relate to that in some way. But a divorce it's hard, especially if you've had to go through that alone.
Yeah, and we talk on the podcast to people who've been through big breakups as well. So it's not all just people who've got divorced. But that's what it started off with, because I was just like, I just want to talk to someone else who's been through what I've been through. So the podcast actually started as an excuse for me to just talk to people so I could be like, never been divorced. Okay, because I have a podcast. So, and that was my way of like just talking to someone else who's been through the same thing and like asking them questions. Yeah. And also, I started to realize that it was this taboo. And, you know, you could tell your friends about it, but at some point they get bored of hearing of your, about your problems. And also, they can't necessarily relate exactly to them.
They can't help.
And it did feel like this club when I started talking to people. And also, what was so interesting is I'd say to people, I've been divorced, you know, tell me about your divorce. And it was like a waterfall that had been dammed up because they hadn't been allowed to talk about divorce for so long. And I was just releasing the dam. And
they were like, oh, I can finally talk about this. Because I bet as well, there's a pressure, isn't there, if you talk about... So, you know, like when, let's use a separate example, if you're starting a new job or someone's joining a company you work for and you know it's not a great company to work for and they're like, oh, how is it? You're almost, it's great, it's lovely. Like, I'm sure you would never, it's awful, the boss is horrendous, blah, blah, blah. Because you don't want to kind of taint their own journey within that experience. And I guess it's the same with divorce. It's almost like there's this unwritten rule. You're not allowed to say it goes wrong because it's meant to be perfect. And, you know, it's meant to be like these fairy tales that we read about and you get married happily ever after and all of that. So I imagine that you granting someone permission to go, oh my goodness, thank you. Like, it was awful. Must have been so freeing.
And people see it as a sort of therapy. And sometimes it's just me like giving that person permission and they go off by themselves for an hour. And I just have to sort of steer them a little bit in the conversation. Yeah. And it's just so interesting to hear everyone's experiences because it's all, you know, we're all going through a similar thing, break up and get in recovery. Yeah. But everyone's story is so different. And I think I've learned so much from like everyone that I've spoken to and all the different ways that they've, the things that they've overcome or the ways that they've kind of recovered and developed in themselves are so incredible. So it's become, a real sort of like club. And it started off as an excuse for me to talk to people.
I love that it's come from a really organic place. And then along the way, not only have you probably made these really awesome friends and connections, but you probably built up a little toolkit in how to like deal with, like you said, grief, because divorcing someone is almost like grief. You're grieving the person that was in your life and the space that they've like left behind.
Yeah, definitely. And the community that the podcast has created is incredible. We have like a Patreon account, which is where like people can support the podcast. But I've turned it into a like little, it's like an MSN chat room for divorce, like through the Patreon.
MSN throwback.
Yeah. Well, it's on an app called Discord. But you join the Patreon and that's, it's from like £2 a month, and that's quite good because it keeps out trolls and stuff. Yeah. So it is just people
who are interested
in the podcast and want to talk about their divorces. Yeah. And then everyone just like chats in there and shares experiences, and it's become this like amazing little hub. And some of the messages I get from people of like, your podcast actually saved my life, and it's so incredible. And I guess it's, you know, it's an extension of the work that I do with my hearing loss. You know, when I was diagnosed, because I was 30, I started to talk about that openly and do stand up about it. And then I became an ambassador for RNID. And I just realized that me being open about it actually helps people, and me talking about it, and also helps me because I learn stuff and have these conversations.
100%. So by sharing your story, you're holding space for people, but you're also allowing yourself to have the space to process those experiences.
Yeah. And so that's what's happened with divorce and what seems to be happening with coming out as bisexual as well. So it's sort of become like a thing I do. So you'll always know if anything happens to me, because I'll tell everyone.
I'll tell you. Don't you worry. Yeah. Don't you worry. They become like a bit of an oversharer, because I think I'm the same in that I'm so open on social media about my struggles with mental health and issues and things I've had along the way. And I also lost my nan at the beginning of the year, which was really difficult because my family unit is really small and I'm an only child, so I don't have the blessing of a sibling. And it's literally me, my mum, my dad, my nan and my granddad, and like that's who we were. So for her to be a missing jigsaw piece was really difficult, and I spoke so openly about it, and so many people were like, thank you so much for sharing, I've never been able to talk about grief, and I didn't know how to talk about it. And I guess it's the same with you and the podcast in that you probably didn't know how to start the conversation about divorce, but then once you started it, you couldn't stop. It was just, oh wow, this is actually really helpful for you as a person, but also for everyone listening.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think being a writer and a comedian, you just have to be an oversharer. Like that goes with the job. So, but I think it's always important to like keep some of yourself back just for you. And obviously, I don't share absolutely everything that happens.
Not every minute of every day.
No, but I do think sharing some important stuff and being open, and like you said about mental health and things, and I have anxiety. And I just think it's kind of, I think the older generation are like, stop telling everyone all your things. But
yeah,
well, my mum is. But actually, I think it's an amazing thing that we can be more open with each other, and yeah, it allows other people the space, like you said, to be open about themselves. And I think it's a good thing.
Me too. It's one of the reasons why, to be honest, I love doing the podcast, because I've always loved, like, when I've always been that person that when I go to a party, like I go somewhere I don't know anyone, I'm sat there like, just tell me your life. Like, I just want to know everything. And it's so interesting when you hear all these little nuggets of advice along the way that end up helping you in the most like surprising ways. Have you had any specific moments on the podcast that have really sunk in or really sat with you or really changed the way you thought about something?
Oh my God, so many. I think there's been some great advice on the podcast, you know, like episode one, season one.
Yes.
Sarah Millican.
You literally started with such a bang.
Yeah. Sarah Millican was like, change your ex's name in your phone so it doesn't come up with that like lovey-dovey nickname that you had from them. It comes up with something funny. And I didn't actually do that as soon as she said it, because
yeah,
I was like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And then it was a few months later that I actually did it. And oh my God, it just made those like divorce exchanges so much more joyful. And, you know, I call myself a joy facilitator now. So like,
yeah,
it just made me giggle every time he messaged, instead of being like, oh God, what
the hell?
And then also just like, you know, people like Kerry Howard said that the first thing she did was she bought herself membership to this posh members club because they had an outdoor swimming pool. And then she went swimming outdoors on her own, just felt like really like powerful, like she was looking after herself. And I think even though
for herself as well.
Yeah, even those moments, they just make you go, yeah, like I'm going to do something nice for myself and I'm allowed. And it has a bigger impact, you know, than you might think.
Yeah.
But yeah, there have been so many, like Helen Thorne saying that she does her nudes that she sends people in black and white, changed my world. I was like, oh my God. And she was like, you look more classy even though you're naked. I was like, that is a top.
It almost takes it the pop art, that kind of era where it's like I just imagine pictures of Twiggy in like black and white, and you know, in like all in these fancy 60s outfits. It's that vibe, but glamour model instead, the glamour model version.
Yeah. So I was like, big learning tip there. Excellent. Yeah, but so much stuff, and I think also, it's speaking to people who got divorced a long time ago, so maybe like 20 years ago, and then talking to them now and them saying they sometimes forget they're divorced is what's like incredible, because when you're going through it, you're like, this is going to change my life forever. I'm always going to be that divorced woman. And to hear from someone that they forget that they're divorced is like the dream.
Yeah, because it is it's just a part of your life. It's like leaving school, or it shouldn't be something that's this grey cloud that follows you, or that you've got a stamp on your mark, like you're officially branded with divorced. You know what I mean? But I think there is that preconception, because I just think of Ross in Friends through the whole, all of the seasons. He's just known as the one that's permanently getting married and getting divorced. That's his kind of character profile, really. So I think, yeah, it's so important to know that you are allowed to leave. I think that links into one of my favourite things. I can't remember which season it was, but one of your guests called their ex-husband the practice husband.
Yes, Jess Robinson, yeah.
Genius.
I love that. And now she's got another husband who's husband proper and is very happy.
Oh, I love that. Husband proper, husband practice.
Yeah, there's so many bits in every episode or every person that I speak to that I'm like, oh, this is great. And yeah, like you said, it's like creating a little toolkit of things that you can use. But also, I definitely have to get, wouldn't it be great to get Ross from Friends, not David Schwimmer, Ross.
But him as the character of Ross.
Yeah.
that happen.
He was always the butt of jokes, wasn't he?
Yeah,
and actually, three divorces, like that is a lot. Like,
savage.
You went through. So yeah, bless it.
I had him on the mice. I went to Friends Fest the other day and it was so much fun. I don't know if you enjoy Friends, but it's in Clapham. Highly recommend. Did all the cheesy photo things. Yeah, it was so much fun. But yeah, bless him, Ross. He's like, I feel like he's known as the least favourite of the characters as well, which must be really hard.
Well, I think he was, but I think now in the kind of re-emergence of Friends, everyone kind of loves Ross.
Yeah.
Chandler was always my favourite.
Speaking of comedy, what do you think kind of led you, was comedy always something that you wanted to do, or is it something that you just kind of fell into and then just realised you love?
Well, I trained originally as an actor, so it was always acting was kind of my first love. But then I've always been drawn to comedy and I like making people laugh, and I always ended up playing all those comedy roles.
Yeah.
I actually auditioned to be in a sketch group, and then we did like two Edinburgh Fringes together and we wrote sketches together. And that was kind of a mix of stand-up and acting for me. And that was kind of my gateway drug into doing stand-up. So when we kind of went our separate ways, one of the girls like moved to the States and stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to give this stand-up comedy thing a go. And what is great about stand-up and comedy is that you don't have to rely on anyone else. So as an actor, you have to get an audition and then do the audition and someone has to cast you and then the director directs you. And it's a really kind of team effort, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But what's great about stand-up is you can just do it on your own terms and write some material and then go to a gig that night and perform it. And so I did it for, God, I don't even know, over 5 years. Must be a little bit of that. And it was really like an empowering time. And I also think it really helped me with working out what my voice was and articulating my own opinions about the world. And that's fed into, you know, me as an actor and me as like a spokesperson and presenter now.
And I love that it's, because I think, because I'm an actor too, and I think we're so often put into little boxes, and it's so nice to hear someone that's gone, actually, I've taken elements of my acting training and utilised that, like you said, to find your own voice within a really oversaturated market, and then turned it into something that you now use to make a real difference in the world as well. Because I think ultimately, I don't know about you, but deep down, that's why I wanted to be an actor, was because I felt like, one, it was really fun. I got to play. I got to live a million lives and, you know, just literally be a child every day and just have that creativity and joy all the time. But also I felt like when people went to the theatre, they left being changed, that they were changed, or when they've watched a film, they changed. And I felt like you could make an impact with your voice. So I think that's really interesting that you've kind of used that and then completely flipped your career on your head, but that core message kind of still travels through.
Yeah, I think storytelling for me is so important, and I still love acting and being in things other people have written, because then it's like you can be a part of their storytelling. But equally I like kind of telling stories of my own and kind of directing where that goes.
I love it. Do you think you'll go back into comedy specifically, or?
Well, I still, you know, act in BBC comedies and all of that sort of thing. And I do speaking events. So, you know, I do a talk, and it tends to be about more serious things now than I necessarily talked about in my stand-up. But there'll always be an element of humour. You know, my children's book
is... It's hard to see you are.
Yeah, my children's book are very silly and they have jokes in them. So there'll always be that aspect. But at the moment, I'm not doing stand-up. But never say never.
This is true. You never know what's around the corner. Do you find that, I personally think that comedy has a real healing element to it? Even the jokes that are self-deprecating, or yourself is the butt of the joke. I think there's like a real, going back to Chandler, I feel like he's the healing one of the group that always keeps everything lighthearted and lifts everyone in times of chaos. Did you find that you lent more towards comedy when you went through times of real hardship, or was it a way that helped you process things, or is it just something you just love to do for fun?
Yeah, it was definitely a way to help me process things. I'd always write jokes about what I was going through, like my hearing loss diagnosis and getting hearing aids and stuff. And I guess that's why I call myself a joy facilitator now, because I think that's the joy of comedy, is bringing bringing people smiles and giggles and, you know, out loud laughs, and helping them forget whatever's going on in their day or lives. And I think now, like with the podcast and stuff that I do, I am talking about more serious issues, but bringing the lightness and the joy, because there's always joy in everything, you know. Like, I never laughed more than after my dad died, because otherwise I would have cried the whole time. So
yeah,
I think that element of joy is still really important to me, but it doesn't necessarily have to come with a setup and a punchline and a big laugh now. It just...
You can pepper it through instead. And somebody told me a while ago that with dark, you have to have the darkness in order to have the light. And I think that's the same with comedy, or like you said, when you go through extreme periods of real challenge or hardship, actually, those are the moments when you probably laughed harder than you ever have before, or you've lived your life more than before. Because when you're happy, you kind of just drift through. But when things are hard, you have to find the joy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that I struggled with stand-up is you have to talk about yourself the whole time. And I love talking about myself, you know, and opening up, but I also want to like talk about other people and hear from other people. And so for me, my stand-up style was always more conversational. And actually, I realized that I missed the other person's, you know, words as well. And that's why podcasts are so great, because it's kind of
an extension of that,
of like me. And I don't do stand up, but it is like me, you know, saying my bit, and then I get to hear from someone else. And that's what kind of brings me joy, is not just talking about myself, but like sharing my experiences and then hearing other people's experiences as well.
Absolutely. Amen to that. I did a solo episode in my first season, and I was literally like, oh my goodness, Lord help me. Like, I got people to ask questions, so they still kind of had like an essence of someone there. But I was like, this is not the same. I'm just sat here chatting shit for an hour. I need someone. I want to hear someone else's voice apart from mine for 45 minutes straight. I can't be dealing with this.
That was all of my stand-up shows, just me chatting shit for an hour.
It's an absolute skill though, because I don't know how you stay on topic. I think because I love comedy and I love the idea of trying stand-up, but I'm just like, I'm such a segue as a human. Like, I am the human embodiment of a segue, so I just wouldn't be able to stay focused. Like, my joke would probably never finish because I'd lead it into another joke then, and I'd forget about the original joke, and then chaos.
Well, I think what people don't realize about stand-up so much is that it's so scripted. Like, it is literally, you write a joke and then you think about every single word in that joke and whether you need it. So by the end, it's really, even though you're making it look like it's just coming off the top of your head and you're having a conversation, it's so like, it's like when you get a script as an actor and the writer is in your audition. So you're like, I have to learn every word and I can't miss anything out, or like change what they've written because they'll, you know, be offended. Yeah. So it ends up being like that. So it's like a script that you've written for yourself. And actually what I loved is when I used to host, and still now, like when I host events, you know, the ad-libbing and the just like reacting to what happens in the room. I always loved that bit. So I'm not so great at sticking to the rules.
But you're the rebel without a cause. I love it. I want to dissect your experience of Magic Mike. a dream. Wow. I mean, that I would love that. What a dream role. But what was it like working there? Highlights, reality behind the scenes. Hit us.
So it was weird because I separated from my ex-husband a week before I started rehearsals for Magic Mike. So I had week. Yeah, so I got offered the job, flew to Vegas to watch the show in Vegas. And then I was in LA working with Channing on the script.
Yeah.
But what in the background...
I love that you're on first name basis by that. Yeah. So I was with Channing.
I call him Chan, actually, but people are like, what? But yeah, Annie.
Goals.
But then, but in the background of all of that, I knew that my marriage wasn't working and that we were going to have to do something about it. So I'm like living this glamorous lifestyle on Instagram. And yeah. In the background, I was like, am I going to break up with my husband? Like, what's going on with my marriage?
How it works.
And then I came back from LA and then we sat down and had that conversation. I think actually sometimes doing something different, like flying to LA and working with Channing Tatum, helps you.
As
like,
you do, just everyday life, you know?
Yeah, but it helps you like think about things, like having some distance. And then I came back and I was like, yeah, I'm not happy, we should break up. And he was like, I agree. So I had a week of like crying in my bed, not having a shower or changing my clothes. And then my sister was staying with me and she was like, you stink, have a shower. And then, so I had that week and then I started rehearsals. And actually it was a great thing because I needed something to do.
Yeah.
And it was also a really weird time because I was doing, you know, I was rehearsing a stage show. I had to do a dance routine on stage, which I've never done before.
Oh my gosh.
And working with all these new people, a lot of whom are, you know, semi-naked professional dancers.
Yeah.
And then in between, I'm like, I'm sick. I'm getting the horse. What's happening with my life? Can I keep my house? And there was actually one point in rehearsals where they played a song and they told me that they were going to play this song. And I was like, okay, sure. And the name didn't mean anything to me. But as soon as they started playing it, I was like, this is my wedding dance song. So I just started crying and like had to go to the toilet and just have a cry. So it was like, it was amazing, but also really strange.
Like, yeah, there was this, it was a backdrop of a lot of a tumultuous time.
Yeah. And obviously there were so many amazing experiences and working with Channing was brilliant. You know, he directed the show and he's a great director because he's a performer as well. So he like, yes, it. And all the people, you know, it was so fun working with everyone. But, and everyone was saying to me, oh my God, you're living your best life. You're getting divorced and you're working with all these people. But actually, I think sometimes, you know, I was divorcing a man. So I kind of didn't want to be around lots of straight men at the time. I sort of wanted just my girls, you know.
Yeah, you just kind of want to be surrounded with girl power. I definitely feel that at the moment. Like the last thing I'm interested in is looking at a bloke. Like I just, I'd rather go and watch Sex and the City or binge watch all of Bridget Jones, do you know what I mean, than see sexy men right now.
Yeah, so it was a bit weird because everyone was like, oh my God, you're in exactly the right place. And I was, and I was having a brilliant time, but I was also like, I'm kind of more interested in like having some ice cream with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
But it was incredible. And actually, it was really nice to be around guys and, you know, emotionally sensitive guys as well who could give me a hug if, like, I was having a hard day or whatever.
So it was
a great experience. And it was just so nice to have something to focus on.
Yeah.
And it also in the show, you know, I wrote jokes and I spoke about female sexual empowerment. And I was also going through that at the time because I talk about on my podcast, like having a sexual explosion because I went a bit mad and just was having a lovely time and orgasms. And even though I didn't have much time because I was doing like, it was like 10 shows a week.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've not got many hours in the day. So well done for fitting it in.
No, you're exactly. I still managed to fit it in. So it was kind of this incredible, like really heightened, amazing time, which I did for 18 months. But yeah, by the end, I was knackered. So sort of during lockdown, the first part of lockdown, I just slept for ages. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And actually, in a way, like you said, I think initially it probably felt like, oh gosh, I don't even know if this is what I want to be doing. But actually, to have a project and then also to have this chaotic but super exciting living the high life time when actually your life is outside is going to shit, so to speak. I guess it reminded you how much there is of life to live and how much there is out there. Because like you said, a marriage is consistency. It's a safety net. And especially when you're in the creative industry where every aspect of it is chaos, it's unpredictable. There's no constant, is there? So I can imagine to have that whirlwind of time actually really powerful and important in the healing process.
Yeah. And I think a lot of what I was going through, I sort of put into my performance. Mm. And then the response from, you know, well, predominantly straight women who'd come to see the show was that they felt so empowered. And they used to send me messages like, you know, you were the reason I applied for this promotion at work. And I'd be like, no, you're the reason. I just gave you a little encouragement. Or people, you know, who'd had a baby and this was their first outing and they said, you know, I helped them feel empowered and like them again. Or just, you know, the messages from people that it really kind of meant something. And I think also that's because of what I was going through at the time, and yeah. I was feeding that into my performance. So yeah, it was a really amazing time, but I'm definitely enjoying a slightly more chilled lifestyle now.
Yeah,
just writing books at home with my new puppy Custard and having a cup of tea, like that's where I'm at.
Love this. I have two things to say about that. One, Custard, what a great dog name, brilliant choice. My dog name that I want in the future is Peanut, so I really appreciate food related animal names. I really enjoy that. And two, what's your tea of choice? Because I'm going through a Yorkshire tea biscuit tea obsession.
I tried that and I wasn't sure.
I think it's quite sweet, isn't it? Yeah, but I've got a sweet tea, so I think that's probably why I never, but I can't stop. And before then, I was a Yorkshire tea gal through and through.
I do like Yorkshire tea. I like PG Tips Yorkshire tea, Twinings, big fan of. Tea pigs, all of them. Yes. I'm an Earl Grey with oat milk girl, quite milky. Oh. And then also I love a chai tea. You know, like
I recently got back into that. I forgot it existed, and I went to my friend's house and she loves a kind of herbal tea, but she made me a chai tea with milk. Absolute game changer. Because I tried it black and I was like, ugh.
Cinnamony and Christmassy. And even in the summer, it just makes me feel all like warm and
Going back into a little bit about the things that you've learned along the way, I have two questions. One, what would be your advice for anyone that is going through a divorce at the moment or is considering it? And then on the flip of that, what would be your advice to people in the 25 to 30 bracket where there's that weird pressure that's just erupted out of nowhere, where everyone is there's two sides of the spectrum, isn't there? There's either, I'd call me, the people like me, I'm on like this chaotic rampage, just living my best London life. I think I'm Carrie Bradshaw, but I'm on a lemonade income. And and then the other side of people getting engaged, married, they have a house. I mean, what is a mortgage? Who knows? What would be your advice for people in that sector as well?
Okay, so I'll start with my advice for people in your age range feeling the pressure. Not that I'm much older. I was going to say,
you're not at all.
I think it's really interesting because a friend of mine was feeling the pressure recently. Mm. And I think, you know, brought up as women who... Yeah, and we're assumed to be straight women from when we're brought up. You know, the goal, the sort of, no one says these are your goals in life, but everything, you know, that you see in the media and films or whatever does say that to you, that your goals are get married, get a house and have some children. And those are like life goals, and they're meant to be the same goals for every straight woman in the world.
Yeah.
And gay and queer women as well. Like,
yeah.
But definitely that, like, find a nice man who has a lot of money and get it out, you know. And I said to my friend who was feeling the pressure, I did that. I found a nice man who had a lot of money. I didn't specifically marry him because he had a lot of money, but like, he, you know,
disclosed.
That's one his job. I bought a house. We were talking about the children thing and I wasn't happy. So I had, and I remember thinking, I've achieved all those goals that I had in my weird goal sort of journey.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy and I don't want any of them. Actually, I wanted the house. But, you know, and actually getting divorced and then kind of, I guess I'd achieved my goals and then I'd come out the other side of it. And it was so freeing because I was like, well, if I've achieved the goals, in inverted commas, now I can do anything I want. Now I can actually do what you want to do.
Like rewrite the tape, make it your own.
Yeah. And so I'd say like, it's definitely not the be on and end all. And it's not even as important as it feels. And I know because when I was on that journey, I was like, oh my God, we've got to get married and then we've got to buy a house. And like, I was thinking all the things in my mind. So I know how it feels like so important, but it's not. Like, I did it, I wasn't happy. Like, the most important thing is to be happy. Like, now I'm divorced, queer, deaf, live on my own with a little dog called Custard, I do own my house. That was one of the good things about the marriage, is that his salary helped me get the house. But then by the time we got divorced, I could take over the mortgage on my own. So that was the good thing about getting married.
Power. I love it.
But I'm so much happier now. And to society, you know, I'm one of those weird, like, hip. When you were younger, you know, you're always like, oh, there's that weird old woman who lives in a house on her own and she's got pets and she's divorced or whatever. And don't go near her because she might give you chocolate and bake you in the oven like a witch. I'm basically that person now, but I'm so happy.
I've always said that if I was born in the back in the day, I'd have been burnt at the stake as a witch, because I've always been that. I think I've embodied that character from a young age. I didn't want to be the princess. I want to be the weird woman that bakes you in the oven. I've got too many things I want to achieve. I don't have time. But it is interesting, because I didn't notice it until, so I've been single for 2 years before I dated my now ex, and I'd achieved so much in that time and literally lived my best life. I'd started a podcast, I'd written a book, I'd moved to London with some of my best friends, and I was literally like, I'd left, just graduated drama school, I was living the dream, and no one thought that I was doing anything worthwhile. And I was like, hang on a sec, like, I'm literally just taking life by the reins and going for it. The moment I got into a relationship, it was like, oh, what are you doing? What? Really? Like, my worth is dictated by me dating someone. Madness. So, yeah.
And that's why I think it's so strange that we say to people, congratulations, when they get engaged. Because we should be like, congratulations that you've been together for so long. Not congratulations that someone gave you a ring. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just a really weird...
That's so true.
But yeah, I think there's definitely a pressure. And it is hard to ignore. But as someone who's come out the other side of it, like, I'm happier than ever. And I wish that I just followed what I wanted to do and not, you know, all those rules that I saw them as. And also, you know, I didn't have children in my marriage. And a lot of people will look at me and be like, oh, you know, you missed the boat. Or and I don't know if I want children.
Yeah.
But that pressure as well, if you're someone with a womb and who wants children, you know, or who society thinks you should have children, that pressure comes up a lot as well. And then I remember as soon as we, not even before we got married, like more like when we were together for over 5 years, suddenly everyone was like, you can have a baby, you can have a baby. And it's like, why? It's I'm a human being. Why are you so interested in like one organ in my body and how it's working? Like,
I'm not a baby factory. I'm allowed to choose what I do with my womb.
Yeah, and also don't ask me about it. If I've got something going on down there and I want to tell you, I'll let you know. So yeah, I would just say I don't know if I'm ever going to have children, and I feel really fine with that now. Yeah. And I'm really happy being single and divorced. So, you know, live your life, and if you can use me as something that helps you relieve the pressure, then please do. And then for people who are getting divorced or thinking about getting divorced, I mean, big love to you. It's so hard. Taking that step of the breakup and deciding to get divorced is like, you know, one of the most courageous things you'll do.
Yeah.
And I know that it takes time to work up to it. And if you've just done it, if you've done it, well fucking done, because it's really hard to take that step.
Yeah.
And now it will feel awful and shit, but it will get better. And I think one of the big things I've taken from my podcast, The Divorce Club, is every single person I've spoken to is happier now than they were when they were in their marriage. So I know it feels like it's never going to get better, but it is. You're going to get through it. And also there's a community of people there who've been through it as well and are, you know, so open and willing to share and being supportive. So, you know, if there's anyone in your life that you can talk to who's been through it before, and get advice. And if you don't have that, you know, listen to the podcast and let us be your community. But it will get better. Going to be an amazing thing. And one day, and I still hope this, one day you will forget that you've been divorced.
I love that as a concept, the fact that it is just something that just happened. The same as you leave a job or you move house, or it's just a thing that happened. You were married and then you were, end of. And I think that's, yeah, it shouldn't have to be this permanent semicolon on your life. You can full stop it and move on.
Yeah. Although saying that, I have become the divorce lady because I ended up a podcast. about it and I keep talking about it on every podcast. So maybe it's going to be harder for me to forget that I'm divorced. But
part of your brain now.
I speak to so many people who found love again and are in really like healthy, amazing relationships. And I think that was one of the really big things for me was, oh my God, I'm never going to find anyone again. I'm going to be alone forever. I'm never going to be in love again. And speaking to people who just are in really healthy scenarios now, really happy and really in love is so nice. And one thing I say quite a lot on the podcast, and I can't remember who said it to me, but it's maths based, but I love it because it makes it feels more factual. It's like, if you take how old you are now and how many people you've been in love with so far, and then you think about how many years you have left, like law of averages says you're going to be in love or in another relationship again. Like, it would be hard
because I think it does feel, oh my goodness, I have to find the love of my life before. There's that horrible statistic, isn't it, where it's you've met the love of your life by the time you're 21. Well, I bloody hope not, because the boys I went to school with were awful. And then I was, you know, in the dance performer community, so everyone just wasn't my type, because they liked boys. They weren't interested in girls. So I was like, I hope I haven't met the love of my life by the time I'm 21.
Well, but also, you know, the love of your life can be like a pet if you want it to be, like,
or your best friend. Oh my goodness, my friends are definitely the loves of my life, the chaotic little humans that they are, but I love them more than I'd probably ever love a boyfriend or a partner or whatever.
Yeah, or your family. And I think, you know, my marriage, I was head over heels in love, but sometimes, and I realize this now, and I never would have said this before I got married, but love isn't enough. You know, you also have to create space for each other, and there's so many other factors that come into having a healthy long-term relationship. Love is amazing, and that's the beginning of it all. There's a lot of other things to take into consideration as well. So
what's your opinion on I'm going to ask this because it's just started, what's your opinion on things like Love Island?
Oh my God, I shouldn't love it, but I love it. I'm obsessed.
Like, I know it's awful and it promotes all of the things that I'm so against, but I also can't stop watching it.
I feel like it's everyone's guilty pleasure. Mm. And like, if you listen to the Guilty Feminist podcast, it's like everyone's, I'm a feminist, but I'm really into Love Island.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting. It's like an experiment that we're watching on like millennial love amongst people who look the way that they all look and have the, I don't want to say the values, because I'm sure they're deeper than the edits that we see. But, you know, at that time, a lot of them are in their early 20s and they look the way they look, and maybe they're models or they work out a lot, so they care about that. So it's like watching this love experiment or relationship experiment. And I just find it so interesting and fascinating. And I become obsessed with all the people in it.
Me too. I always know that the first couple of episodes I'm not invested in, I get really annoyed because I'm like, they look the same. This is so shallow, blah, blah, blah. 3 weeks in, I'm, oh, Casa Amor happens. And then you're just, oh my goodness, he betrayed her. Or you get so invested in the storyline.
Like a soap. I mean, obviously I want there to be more diversity.
Yes.
With sexualities, more racial diversity, more body image diversity. But I am addicted to it.
I'm glad that you said that, because I was like, I wonder how. It's always interesting when you ask it, because people tend to be one way or the other. Like, even my friendship group is really divided. I've got a few friends that just downright refuse to watch, and then I've got friends that are like, no, I don't watch it, and I know you do.
Well, I feel like if I'd never watched it, I'd be like fully like, oh my God, it's awful. Like, they shouldn't, it's promoting the wrong things. But as soon as you watch it, you just get addicted. It's like all of those reality TV shows. You're like, why do I like it? I just do.
It's so bad, but it's so good. My final question for you is the other question that I'm asking everyone this season, which is the best piece of advice you've ever been given.
It's so funny, because I think there have been, I think it depends like where you are in your life and what you're going through. Because I think there have been so many great bits of advice that I've had through the years. But I think it's a funny one, but I think it's really true. You know, everyone's like, you do you. You do you, babe.
You do.
Not in a sarcastic way, but I really feel like you do your own thing, you create your own journey, your own rules, your own idea of everything. And I think become more and more important to me with going through, you know, the divorce and everything and the hearing loss and, you know, and also overcoming my own stigma about a divorce, what a divorced person is like, and what someone in the deaf community is like and what a bisexual person is like, you know. You feel all those stereotypes and you kind of fight them and then you break them apart and you just do it in your own way. And I think that's a bit of advice that I'm thinking about at the moment.
Simple but effective. I absolutely love it. And I always give everyone a chance at the end to basically tell us where we can find you, anything you've got up and coming that we might be able to, there's no NDAs that we can know about, and self-plug to the heavens. This is your moment.
Wow. Okay. Well, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Samantha Baines. I have a website, samanthabaines.com. My book Harriet versus the Galaxy is available in all good bookshops and is about a little girl with a hearing aid who fights aliens in space with her gran. And my new book The Night the Moon Went Out is available to pre-order, comes out in August, and should be available from all good bookshops. Again, my podcast is called The Divorce Club and is available on all podcast platforms. We're up to series 5. We've been nominated for a British Podcast Award.
I was gonna say, you've absolutely smashed, like, you are my inspiration in the podcast world, because didn't you get to perform as well at the London Podcast Festival?
Yeah, that was really great, on the Guilty Feminist Day. So that was awesome. Yeah, there's a whole range of experiences and great chats on there.
That's so exciting. Do you think you'll be taking, because I know you did a mini book tour with the last one, are you going to do a book tour with the new novel? Or,
well, I don't know, because COVID. Yeah, because of the way the world is right now. But I do school workshops, like via Zoom. So I do a little reading from my book, and then we do exercises in, like, writing jokes and things kind of related to the book. So I'll definitely be doing a few of those. And I'm doing a few, like, online literary festival conversations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with the Newham Word Literary Festival and Jericho Writers Festival and stuff like that. So all of that shall continue.
That's amazing. I'm sure we'll be able to find and keep up to date with you on your social media to know what you're up to or what's going on. And I definitely recommend everyone listen to The Divorce Club, even if you're not a divorcee. It is so insightful, and I just think it is just some really interesting conversations. And like you said, it just removes so many stigmas. But I also felt really empowered after some of the episodes about, like, sexual empowerment, or even just knowing that it's okay for things to go wrong.
Yeah, totally. I get so many messages from people who are like, I'm not divorced, but I still really like your podcast, or like, I'm happily married. So I made a little post on Instagram that says, I'm happily married, but I still like the podcast, or something. Because people were like worried that their other halves were going to see that they've been listening to The Divorce Club and worry. Yeah, it starts as a divorce conversation, but a lot of the time we sort of go off into kind of general life and overcoming difficult scenarios.
I love that you've created this, like you have done for the deaf community as well. I think this, like, community of people, divorcees, that can bounce off one another and, like you said, hold space for one another when a lot of people don't talk about it. Thank you so much for coming on to speak to me today. It's been an absolute joy. You're such an inspiration in so many ways. Your creativity never ceases to inspire, and I think you're making real waves in all of the different sectors that you occupy. And I love the concept of a joy facilitator. I think, like, that's going to be the big thing that I take through.
Amazing. Yeah, please feel free to call yourselves joy facilitators if it floats your boat. All right, thanks so much.
Bye. Have a good one.
To stay in the know on Jeans and a Nice Top podcast, follow us on Instagram at Jeans and a Nice Top Pod, and make sure to hit that follow and subscribe button for the latest drops and guest reveals. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on next week's episode, podditors.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.